Podcast. I'm your host, Cami, and we're continuing our Narrating Ordained Women series. And I have with me from the beautiful state of Hawaii, Natasha. Hi, Natasha.
Hello.
Aloha. Do you guys ever...
Aloha, yeah. Aloha.
Yeah, there you go. What island are you on?
We're on Oahu.
Oahu, okay. So Natasha has a profile on ordainedwomen.org, and she's going to tell us a little bit about her story, why she has a profile there. So Natasha, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you end up in Hawaii, or did you grow up there? What's your status in the church, marital status, things like that?
Okay, well, I did not grow up here in Hawaii. We actually moved here just about, it will be 2 years in January. And my husband's in the military, so we were in Fort Hood, Texas before we moved here. But I'm a convert to the church. I joined when I was 13. We were staying with my grandmother, who is Mormon, and I started to attend Mutual. My mom's side of the family joined when she was around 15, but my mom had stopped attending after she had me at 16. She just ran into a lot of different issues with the church at that time. It was more of the premarital sex and having me at 16 and keeping
me. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And keeping you. Did she have a lot of pressure to have you adopted out?
Yeah, she did. She had a lot of pressure, and even the doctor who delivered me was Mormon, and so she also had pressure in that direction as well.
Oh, wow.
So it was, there was a lot of pressure, a lot of very terrible things were done that shouldn't have been done, but she kept me, and my parents got married, and so later on, because my mom had, even though she was exposed to Mormonism for a short period of time, she still carried a lot of those beliefs with her. And so I was exposed to some basic Mormon concepts and beliefs throughout my childhood.
Okay.
And also as I got older, I would attend with my grandmother. We, my sister and I would fly to visit my grandparents, and we'd attend with them on Sundays. And I actually hated it.
Really?
Everyone was very unfriendly. I didn't have any friends. People were, you know, they didn't really want to try and make friends with me. And I thought it was boring. It was very boring too.
Besides the Mormon church, did you guys go to a different church?
No, we did not. My dad's side of the family is Baptist. And so his parents are very active in their church, but my dad was never religious. I guess once he married my mom.
Okay.
And well, all of my beliefs actually come from my mom, because my dad, he didn't even really believe in God or anything. So my grandparents, they also did not like the Mormon church at all either. Fortunately, though, they were able to put that aside when my sister and I got baptized, and they attended the baptism. So
that
was very nice of them.
Was that your paternal or maternal grandparents?
Yes, my paternal grandparents. They're Baptist and had a lot of issues with the Mormon church because I am biracial and they're Black, and had a very difficult time with the church, especially because of the priesthood ban and everything.
Yeah. And did they live in the South, or where did they live?
My dad's parents were also military, so they moved around a bunch, but I got baptized in the Intermountain West area, so there were lots of Mormons there, and that's where they live as well.
Okay, because I grew up in the South. You had mentioned Fort Hood. I had grown up in the South, and Baptists in the South are very much anti-Mormon. At least they were when I was growing up, so I didn't know if that had an effect on it. Okay, so tell us a little bit about your upbringing.
After I got baptized, my family moved into a house that we were waiting to be built at the time, and the church was a very different experience for me there. It was not as friendly or as inviting and welcoming as what I had been baptized into. A lot of people in the area didn't realize that Black people could be Mormon, and then they also would not be friends with people who weren't Mormon. So initially it created some hurdles. But once I was able to figure out what ward I was in and all of that, you know, I ended up having a lot of really good experiences overall, and I have a lot of great memories from that time. And just being part of that large community, I think the first high school I went to, the estimate was like 80%, and that was based off of seminary enrollment.
Wow.
Yeah. But I also had a lot of struggles. And in some ways, I would say that because of and despite my struggles, I am who I am today because of all that opposition that I felt, especially in regards to the church. Mm. And being biracial and phenotypically Black was a very difficult thing. It was very hard to be in such a racially homogenous church and in an area where most people's life experiences were the same and mine did not mirror theirs. Mm. But I was very devout and attended church most Sundays on my own, which meant that I also sat alone. And I quickly realized how differently I viewed things from all of my peers. And I was concerned with women's rights from a very early age and also marriage equality and racism. Hmm. But actually, I guess this part's kind of surprising, at least to a lot of other people that I've talked to about this, but I didn't have any pushback on my views on women having the priesthood when I was younger. And I don't know if everyone just kind of wrote it off like, okay, whatever, Natasha, but that wasn't really an issue with people or something at least that people chastised me about or anything.
You know, that's interesting. I kind of wonder if being kind of on the outskirts of the norm, if in whatever kind of context that is, I wonder if people on the outskirts are given a little bit more leeway to express themselves differently or to be different because they're already different, you know?
Yeah, maybe, because they all knew that I was a convert and that I was the only one attending in my family and that, you know, I had all of these very liberal views. So, you know, whatever.
They're like, at least she's coming to church. Yeah. Maybe we can save her later.
But, oh, and I think the other thing was nobody was really concerned that I was going to get married. Like that was like these views weren't going to be passed on to posterity because that was, you know, nobody would date me there. So it was one of those things where I had pushback when it came to my race, a lot of pushback. And, you know, I have that stuff where the Sunday school teacher told the normal stuff about the curse of Cain. I sat through a class where everyone made fun of me during the Cain and Abel lesson because obviously Cain was my uncle.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So obvious. Good grief.
Told that, you know, I brought racism upon myself and that racism doesn't exist. And when I turned 16, that's where things became a little bit more difficult for me because of what I was saying, that everyone started saying that the church advises against dating outside of your culture so people couldn't date Black people.
But racism is in your head, Natasha. But we're not going to date you. But that's, if you think that's racist, that's your fault.
It's just because we're different cultures. And, you know, my response was always like, but I'm half white too.
Yeah, exactly.
But we go to the same school and I'm in the same church and we're in the same neighborhood. So aren't we the same culture? It was...
We could have a whole podcast on this. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that part right there was very difficult for me because there was so much buildup to, like, hey, turning 16 and young women's is all about getting married and going to the temple. And I would always get that aside from my leaders of, but this doesn't really apply to you. And that was very difficult for me. When I went and got my patriarchal blessing, I was very excited because it said I would get married in the temple. And my leaders were just like, yeah, but that also applies to the next
life. To the next life. Natasha, I just have to ask, why did you stay so involved? If you were the only person going and there was so much pushback, I'm curious why you kept going.
Because I really felt like I had a testimony of the Book of Mormon and of the gospel. And so it was very important to me at the time. And it was after I turned 16 and I started to see all of these messages that I was getting. And now, you know, especially being at that age where it was clear, I had trouble when I was 14 because, you know, every week you had those stake dance, or every 2 weeks you had stake dances. And then I'd go with all my friends so frequently and then nobody would ask me to dance. All the guys would come up and ask all the other girls, and they'd bring a group to ask them all, but they wouldn't ask me. And so that was difficult. But then once I hit 16 and I realized, like, this isn't going to go away, I really started to internalize that. And I remember going to one of those standards nights or purity things or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just with all of the emphasis that is placed on white and pure and all of this stuff in the church and all the kind of backhanded racist remarks that a lot of people don't notice. At that point, I was really wondering and struggling with, you know, they're saying that every, you know, you need to be white, you need to be this, and, you know, they have all these different ideas of what the celestial kingdom looks like, and they say that I'm this color because of a curse. Mm-hmm. And they also say when you get to the celestial kingdom that, you know, if you've had any damage to your body or anything like that, it's going to be repaired. And I remember asking my mom at this time, like, does that mean that if I go to the celestial kingdom that I will be white and I won't have the skin color anymore? And I don't remember what my mom said. I imagine she said something very loving and like, oh no, that's not going to be the case. But at the same time, because it wasn't coming out of the mouth of church leaders, it was still very hard for me to accept and understand. And eventually, when I was 17, I was just done with it. And so I left for 3 years. I went to Chicago, which was very different. But
yeah, that's very different.
You know, I went to school in Chicago. I got my degree. I married my husband. And that's actually when the issue of women's roles in the church actually started to become a lot more apparent and obvious to me that, like, this was a bigger problem than I had experienced in my youth.
It's interesting, once you get married, there is a very strong expectation of who you really are supposed to be.
Definitely. And that I wasn't really prepared for.
What was your degree in? You said you got a degree?
Yeah, I went to the University of Chicago and I got a degree in sociology. And so they actually invented sociology there. So.
Oh, okay.
So I guess it's a little bit different than at a lot of other schools. At University of Chicago, it's very statistics heavy.
Oh, okay. But now you're living in Hawaii. How do you apply your degree? Do you have a certain job in sociology or what do you do?
No, right now, I've always wanted to be a lawyer. So once we moved here, actually before we moved here, I was working in the youth development area. I was a unit director for Boys and Girls Club. And I decided that I wanted to see if I really liked law. So right now I'm a paralegal for a criminal defense attorney.
Oh, okay. So back to you getting married and the roles being so stark and contrasting of what you're supposed to be. Did your husband know that you felt that way about women's roles as far as like the priesthood? You said that you had felt women should have the priesthood at a very early age. Did he know that you had that strong of a feeling about it? Or
yes, he did. Again, I've always been very vocal about these things and I went to an incredibly liberal school. So I remember the first point where I realized that not everyone was a feminist in the world. That was a Mormon guy in the singles ward. I had said something and he turned to me and he said, "Are you a feminist?" I'm like, "Of course, aren't you?" And he was like, "No." So shocked. And wow. I just kind of thought that everyone was a feminist, but the title was a bit outdated. So I didn't even realize that not everyone believed in feminism at the time. So, and it wasn't because he thought feminism was too extreme. It was because he definitely believed that women should not be in the workplace.
Wow. Interesting. So when did you post your profile? Did you know about this coming when it first started? Or how did you come about hearing about ordained women and getting involved?
We've been married for 6 years, and sometimes it feels like a lot longer, but
yeah,
only 6 years. And I think just kind of going through that time and moving to different wards, we went back to my home state for a little while. We went to Texas, and now being here, women's rights in the church became a bigger issue for me because I was exposed to a lot of people with a lot of different views on how women should be. You know, my husband was told that it's dangerous to allow me to work because if both people work, then you end up getting a divorce. And that was in the ward at our university. And even when I was back there and still trying to interact with other people who were going to the university, you know, the men would tell me, you should be talking to my wife. You should not be part of this conversation.
Wow.
And that, given that I was in school and taking similar classes, I felt like that was very dismissive because I had more in common with them than I did with their wives. And then moving to Texas and seeing how kind of that quiverful movement had impacted or infiltrated our ward there, that was another thing that made me have to kind of step back and really examine my religion and how I felt about what was going on and how I was treated. Mm-hmm. And once we got here to Hawaii, race no longer was an issue because everyone's brown here. Everyone has brown skin. Mm-hmm. And so it was no longer about me being on the outside because I looked different and having to address that first. It became that I was treated differently because, you know, I was a woman. I'm a woman like these other women. So I stopped for a while. I think I was just looking things up online because I'd never met anybody else who believed that women should have the priesthood. And somehow I came across ordained women and I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And then I thought, you know what, I should put up a profile. But then I stepped back and I was like, well, maybe I shouldn't, you know, what is this really about? And I started looking at some different commentary on it and people seemed, you know, some people were for it and some people were against. And so I thought I needed to take some time to figure out, is this what I really wanted to do? And so I took about 8 months to really think that through. At one point, I realized, like, you know what, this is silly. I've always believed that. Even if other people feel like this isn't the right approach, I don't see a better approach right now. And this really encapsulates what I've been feeling. So, you know, I'm going to do it. And so I posted my profile. I think it went up the week before April General Conference.
Of 2013?
Or of 2014.
2014. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's terrific. And so what type of response did you receive after doing that?
Well, I posted it to my Facebook. And I think, again, because most of the people I grew up with, they already knew about my beliefs. They know that I, you know, have these beliefs that aren't mainstream to the rest of Mormonism. You know, nobody said anything. I didn't really get anything directly on my Facebook. But I did, from people I had friended here in Hawaii, I got reported. I got reported to the stake level and the ward level.
Wow.
So my husband and I were called in for a very long meeting with our bishop. It was a 2-hour meeting. And I was accused of being an apostate. And they had investigated me by going around and asking people prior to this meeting what I had been teaching and saying and, you know, if other people had concerns about me. And at this time, I had given a talk that they asked me to give. And I don't, you know, I'd been in the ward for about a year and I'd given a talk that they asked me to give, volunteered for another talk and gave that talk. I was a leader in Young Women's, working in the temple every week and had a set appointment time to go out with the missionaries every week as well. And so when I got called in for this meeting and to also have found out before the meeting that they were investigating me, I felt very betrayed. And it was very hurtful that I had done so much and I had been giving so much. And, you know, I had never just gone off track and thought, like, hey, this is what I think about the priesthood or anything. You know, I had the bishop and other members in the bishopric had committed me for being so doctrinally sound in front of the entire ward that I just felt like to even question that was to throw out everything that they knew of me. And I was really saddened that them finding out that I had this belief could, I guess, shake and change everything that they knew and perceived about me.
Wow. And so did you get released from any callings or what was the result of that?
I did not. The bishop told my husband and me that he was not going to do any discipline or anything like that at the time. He wasn't sure if he would in the future. They need to have more meetings and talk about it. He said that any disciplinary action that would be taken against me would also be taken against my husband because he's in the picture that I posted for my profile and because he agrees with me. I was told that they'd be watching me, that I was walking a very thin line, and that they could not guarantee that if this got back to the temple president, that he would not release me as a worker. So I didn't know exactly what he was trying to say with that, but I also felt like because I had given so much and was doing so much that now, in a way, he was trying to get me to get back in line, even more in line than I already already was. And I felt how I did when I was a teenager, that no matter what I do, no matter how I dress or act, or, you know, as a teenager, how many times I straighten my hair or whatever it may be, like, I will never be fully accepted and be part of this. And it brought back those same feelings for me, that nothing I do will be good enough for me to be fully accepted. So I asked to be released from everything because I also did not like the idea that they were going to continue to talk to people I would interact with to make sure that I was not saying anything, because I was told that the stake had a concern and that I was not allowed to speak about my beliefs with anyone within the stake boundaries.
Wow.
Unless directly asked. So I did not want to put people I was interacting with in the position to have to then either defend or report back on me. So I asked to be released from everything. I stopped going out with the missionaries. I asked to be released from the, well, we volunteered for the temple, so we just did that on our own. But I asked to be completely released from that and to release from my calling, because it was also people who I was working with in my calling that did report me. And I asked to no longer be a visiting teacher.
And how have things transpired since then? What has happened with you personally?
Personally, I have reevaluated the way I practice my faith. I've always had a hard time with some concepts within the church and within the gospel. And for the first time, I'm accepting that I have these challenges, that there are just certain things that I don't believe in or fully accept. And I'm giving myself permission to do that. And I'm giving myself permission to live my faith in a way that I want to live my faith. And right now, that means going to church with my husband, but also going to a Unitarian Universalist church.
I also have attended the UUN where I live too. What kind of experience have you had with that?
My experience, I think, because in a sense that this, my experience with putting up my ordained women profile had really kind of, that fallout, at least with church leadership, had ended up being a little more traumatic than I anticipated. I know that I probably went in there and people are like, what's wrong with this person? She doesn't want to give us any information and she's worried about us showing up at her house. And she, you know, I have all these.
You mean the people at the Unitarian Universalist Church?
Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They're, I'm sure they think that I'm completely bizarre. Cause I'm like, wait, if I put my name down on this paper, what does that mean?
Right. Right.
You know, and, you know, I, at first, the first few times I wouldn't participate in anything. I just kind of observed and these words like covenant in their daily meeting or in their weekly meetings. And I'm like, covenant, not doing it, not committing to anything. So, you know, it's been an experience. Now that I've been going a little bit longer, I'm more comfortable with that. And I really appreciate, I mean, their views are more in line with what I believe. I think that if anybody who knows me and who read the UU principles would be like, yep, this is the perfect church for you. So,
it was neat to go there. And one of the pastors was a woman, and to spend time with her, it was interesting to see that different dynamic.
It's also interesting that to be attending two churches that were on complete opposites of the Marriage Equality Act here in Hawaii.
That's true. They both have been very involved in just in different aspects, for sure.
But it's been good, and I'm working through all of that. This experience has led to a transition for me of my faith and of just, I guess, me as a person. So a lot of opportunity for growth, and it's been difficult, but I'm happier now. And I think it's been hard for my husband's family, but my husband has been very supportive. He is just by my side through all of this, and has really, going through this, has strengthened our marriage. Before, I was so sure that, like, oh, well, this and this won't happen in our marriage because my husband would definitely not want to lose the priesthood. And, you know, we wouldn't want to have these experiences with the church or whatever. And I've now been able to take the church out of our marriage and just realize, like, you know what, it's our love, it's our bond. Even though we probably wouldn't have ended up, well, even meeting each other if it was not for our common faith at the time, we have moved beyond that. Our foundation is more than that.
Right.
And I'm very grateful for that, and to have been able to realize that right now at this point in our marriage, and to allow this experience to bring us closer together instead of driving us apart.
You know, it kind of seems to me as you're talking that even if you're not seeing the equality and the respect as an African American or as a woman in the church that you've gone to and dedicated so much time to, the marriage that you have, you're finding this amazing amount of egalitarianism and equality and love and mutual respect, and it's neat that it's on a micro level for you.
Yes, I would agree. I've had so many great experiences from just putting up that profile. It has just, it ushered in so much, just so much richness and life into our relationship, into my life, and, you know, into everything. And I think I also have been able to learn from other people's stories too. So one of the things that I have done is I contacted a Mormon counselor. So I've been getting counseling too to help with me interpret this. And I realized that I also have, my counselor thinks that I have scrupulosity, which is, I've always had really bad OCD throughout my life. So that's not really surprising, but I feel like because the church really, it really allows for people with those sort of behaviors to hide them so well that you just never notice. And so now that I'm changing the way I practice my faith, I've realized that there are other things that I also have to work through and uncover.
That's an interesting insight. And even somebody who doesn't have that tendency, like myself, I found that I was really, because the church does focus so much on behavior and outward appearance, that I was constantly doing a checklist. It was obsessive. You know, did I read my scriptures twice today personally and do my family scriptures? I have to be on guard because, you know, there's just an immense amount of pressure to hit every checklist. So, yeah, there's a lot of peace in letting that go and allowing more personal development and internal development.
Yes. Yeah. And also, I have a lot of time. That was another thing. I freed up a lot of time. So I'm trying to work on personal growth with
real personal
exercise.
Your real personal progression workbook. That's wonderful. It just sounds like even if the reason for getting on Ordained Women was to help with the cause, it sounds like it's made your life personally so enriched that it's bringing forth a lot of good fruit. That's really wonderful to hear, Natasha.
Yes, and I feel like I really saw that last night for attending our local priesthood sessions.
So you're talking about the local priesthood session action for October 2014?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, so I wasn't going to go, but after my husband and I had been watching conference yesterday, decided to go, and we actually met up with somebody else here on the island and her son, and we went, and we Went in there, we sat down for about 10 minutes, and after 10 minutes, they came, asked us to leave, and they did leave. They asked us for our ward and our names and all of that stuff. And the guy also told us that this was disobeying priesthood leaders, council, and all of that. But I have to say that that experience was one that I will always treasure, and just a very powerful experience to me. Because for the first time, I was not standing alone. I was not defending myself. I was part of this larger group. I was part of this whole, and people all over the country were doing this, all over the world were doing this. And I was so grateful to be a part of this and to stand for something that was more than just me, and to not stand alone. And just the amount of love that I have for everyone who participated in this, all my sisters and brothers who participated in this, I can't even accurately explain it, because it was just so moving to be part of that. Mm. And I know my husband, he hadn't experienced something like that before, so it was difficult for them. And then for other reasons, it was difficult for the other people involved. It's heartbreaking to see that, you know, we couldn't be let in, and that we weren't disrupting anybody's spiritual experience, but mm-hmm. by having us leave, that was probably more of a disruption than our presence there. But, and you know, nobody really cared about that. But setting all of that aside, I am so grateful for that opportunity. And now that I've had a chance to process it a little bit more, the one thing I am concerned about, and the one thing that I do worry about, is as we move forward and as ordained women moves forward, is that even though I was part of that and I got to be part of that whole, I do wonder if the next time when it comes to it being about race or just anything having to do with people of color, mm-hmm. I don't want to have to stand alone again. And my fear is that I will stand alone again. And I think that standing alone at that point will hurt so much more after having experienced standing together with everyone else last night.
So what issue are you referring to as far as being afraid of standing alone? Are you afraid that might come up?
I've had so many experiences with discrimination due to my race, right, that I'm afraid that that will continue to go on unnoticed and mm-hmm. by people who aren't people of color.
Yeah.
That other people will allow that to continue to go forward because they don't see how it affects them as well.
You know, just hearing your story and hearing you going over where you've come from and going to this priesthood action, I can see where it might have been hard for the people that were going to this with you, feeling like for the first time they're standing alone. But I can see how, like, for the first time you were finally standing together with other people, and how much you must have appreciated that coming from where you've always felt alone in this church. I think that's great. Yeah.
Yes, it is interesting that to hear that. That's something I've talked about with other people, that they did feel very alone and that they were being discriminated against for just inherently who they are, and mm-hmm. there's nothing that they can do about that, and they hadn't experienced that before.
Yeah.
And I don't know, because for me, my first time having that experience was so long ago, but I imagine that having that experience would be very jarring. It would be mm-hmm. so hurtful and would shake your worldview. Mm-hmm. And so I can see how that is, you know, where I'm having a completely different experience, I suppose, than what other people are having. But mm-hmm. for me, it has really changed my worldview, because I was included. Mm-hmm. I was part of it. We were fighting for the same thing together, and it didn't matter what my skin color was or what their skin color was. And I want that sort of mentality to move forward with in everything.
I pray that it will, Natasha.